Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's known as the creeping disaster because a drought does not start or end suddenly. There are no weather radio alerts, no winds ripping roofs from buildings or tearing trees from their moorings, nothing to catch anyone's attention at first. And then before you know it, the U.S. Drought Monitor announces that more than 98% of the state was in drought as of Tuesday, up from 78% last week. Joining us now to talk about that is state climatologist Jeff Rogers. He's a professor of geography and atmospheric science at Ohio State University. Welcome to the show, Jeff Rogers.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Jeff Masters. He received his Ph.D. in air pollution meteorology from the University of Michigan in 1997, and 2 years later, co-founded the Weather Underground. It's the world's first commercial internet weather website, where he is the director of meteorology. Welcome to the show, Jeff Masters.
Good morning, Ann.
So, Jeff Rogers, can you start off and just tell us what we mean by a drought, what exactly they are, and how they come to be?
Okay, well, a drought is generally regarded as a period of abnormal dryness that begins to have an economic impact. And that's about it. That's the basic definition. It's a period of dry weather that extends so long that it starts to impact water supplies and agriculture. Primarily, those are the primary effects in Ohio.
And Jeff Masters, when, as a meteorologist, as you're observing the climate, do you start thinking, maybe we have a drought coming on?
Well, there's a weekly product that comes out from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration called the Drought Monitor. And when you start to see those brown colors steadily advancing over a period of weeks, then we start to get concerned. And when we look at the long-range model forecast showing a ridge of high pressure entrenching itself over the U.S., like was the case earlier this year, then we say, looks like the drought's coming. And in particular, we had such a very warm winter this year, followed by the warmest spring on record. Well, that really increases your chances for drought because it dries out the soil and sets the stage for a hot summer.
It dries out the soil at a time when you're usually expecting a lot more moisture, right, Jeff Rogers?
Yes, and under the worst circumstances, which there's some hints currently that it might be happening in the midsection of the country, under the worst circumstances, the soil gets so dry that it doesn't provide any moisture to the atmosphere at all, so that not only does the soil is the soil dry, but it prevents clouds from forming and it stops any further rain production.
Is there, Jeff Masters, I don't know if you had it in Michigan. We had some really severe weather a few weeks ago, lots of from really, really strong winds. And is there ever any connection between drought and severe storms like that?
There's a connection between heat and severe storms because thunderstorms require instability to get their updrafts going more strongly to create a more powerful thunderstorm. And whenever it's hot, you make it a situation where you can get more powerful storms. But you do need to have moisture as well. And we did have the case a couple weeks ago with that large-scale thunderstorm complex called the Derecho,
right,
where there was enough moisture available to create some very intense thunderstorms, kind of tornado-scale intensity.
Right, and it was, here at least, Jeff Rogers, it was extremely hot before that. And then the only benefit of the whole thing was that we got a little cooling off period for
about
a day.
That's right. It was 98 and 100 the days before and the day of. And then it just set off in the upper Midwest near Chicago and swept through the state.
We're talking about drought today. My guests are Jeff Masters. He's director of meteorology for Weather Underground, and also Jeff Rogers, professor of geography and atmospheric science at OSU. He's also a state of Ohio climatologist. For our listeners, ask if you're a farmer or somebody else whose business depends on more moderate weather and is hurt by drought, give us a call. Tell us your story, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also call us, and if you have any questions about drought, you're welcome to call and pose your question or comments there. And you can also go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and do it there as well. So, Jeff Masters, how does this drought stack up against others historically?
As far as the amount of drying of the soil, we haven't experienced a drought this large since the 1950s, and before that, a couple years during the Great Dust Bowl of the 1930s. So this is definitely a historic drought. As far as economic damage goes, we're looking at estimates somewhere around $50 billion in economic damage so far from this drought. That would make it the fourth most expensive natural disaster in American history. Number one is Hurricane Katrina, and you might be surprised to learn that number two and number three are both droughts. Number two was the 1988 drought, which cost $78 billion, and then number three was the 1980 drought, which was $56 billion. So any way you measure it, this is a historic drought.
But when you're talking about economic damages, isn't that also in relationship to what we have created economically? So we have a lot more to lose now than, say, we did back in the 40s or the 30s? Because a lot of people think of the Dust Bowl, you know, during the Depression as the worst thing that ever happened in terms of drought.
Yes, because economic damages are dependent on how much wealth there is. And despite the drought, we're still looking at the third largest corn harvest on record this year because so many acres were planted. Yes, there's more stuff to lose nowadays, so the economic damages are greater. If you look at the Great Dust Bowl, that's really hard to calculate the damages it did. But we know that government assistance alone amounted to about $13 billion, so that was a huge impact to the economy. And 2.5 million people were displaced by that event. A giant sort of homeless situation that we've never experienced in the U.S. before or since. So, the costs of the 1930 Dust Bowl drought are pretty much incalculable and probably much greater than what we're experiencing now.
Jeff Rogers, we learned a lot from the Dust Bowl experience because we're not losing things in the same way during drought because we don't have the same kind of Dust Bowl problems. What changed?
Well, I think that there was a lot of changes in farming practices, especially in the plain states, but possibly also affected here in Ohio. Differences in conservation, field conservation, soil conservation, and just general management of the land over the years. But in addition, too, we've also had changes in the different types of corn that have been planted, and we have different hybrids. For example, the much of the corn that's in Ohio right now wasn't in the fields in 1988, and it's different. It's different corn than it was then, and it has different reactions to drought than the corn of 1988.
Jeff Masters, do droughts? Are they always the same? They're just hot and dry? Or do they have different characteristics? For instance, the 1980, 1988, and the one we're going through now?
The key thing to keep in mind about this drought is it's a one-year drought. Last year, we had some of the greatest rainfalls on record across the center of the country. So the deep soil is still remembering part of that moisture. And so the odds of getting another drought year after this one aren't as great as, say, during the Dust Bowl when you had year after year after year of dry conditions. That was a multi-year drought. The drought conditions helped bring about, you know, further drought conditions the next year. And so far, this is just a one-year drought, and I'm hopeful we'll just keep it at 1 year.
Ann and Galena, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I was just wondering if you could tell me if this drought that we're having is going to be kind of permanent, and does it have anything to do with global warming? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, it's hard to say if it's going to be. It's never permanent. It always ends at some point. Even the drought of 1988 ended abruptly in the middle of the month of July. It's hard to say when this will end. In the southern plains, it's been going on now into a second year, although this year, from their perspective, isn't as bad as it is here. But this is the first really bad year in Ohio in over a decade. Is it related to global warming? The answer, we don't know for sure, but it certainly looks like it's related to global warming according to climate models. Climate models predict that precipitation extremes will get greater in the United States with global warming. And by extremes of precipitation, we mean there will be long periods of dryness, followed by short periods of extremely high precipitation to the point of flooding. So we see long dry spells and then very wet spells. We've seen this over the last decade in Ohio, but the dry spells, fortunately, have only been running 3 to 4 weeks, and then we would get a lot of rain. This summer, it's gotten out of control, and we had at least until last week a long eight week dry spell. But it's starting to rain a little bit here. It's maybe not catastrophic rains, but we are starting to see a transition now away from some of the dryness for a period.
Jeff Masters, of course, not everybody agrees on climate change and that sort of a thing. What's your do you agree, disagree? Any other thoughts?
I like to talk about it in terms of probabilities or in terms of loading the dice. You can think of Mother Nature as rolling 2 6-sided dice to decide the weather. So sometimes she rolls snake eyes and we get a ton of rain. Other times she rolls double sixes and we get a bad dry period and drought. But what global warming does is now you've loaded the dice. You've painted an extra spot on one of the dice. And now instead of rolling double sixes, you can roll a 13. So you can get an unprecedented event, something you've never seen before. And when you've got a hotter climate, you're going to have more intense droughts. So we should expect to see more droughts like this year's in the future. Whether this year's drought in particular was influenced by climate change, that's harder to say. All we can say is we increase the probability of these sorts of events. And by 2050, it's expected that these sorts of droughts will become twice as common. We'll get them instead of every 24 years, we'll get them maybe every 12 years.
My guests are Jeff Masters. He's director of meteorology for Weather Underground, and also Jeff Rogers. He is teaches geography and atmospheric science at OSU, and he's also a state of Ohio climatologist. Tell us your story about drought. How are you surviving? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
After a two-day detente, the presidential rivals troop to the VFW in search of the vet vote. And as Romney gets set to jet to London, Jerusalem, and Warsaw, Republicans will have to wait for his Veep. I'm Neil Cunningham. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us with a new trivia question. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 here on 89.7 NPR News. 78 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 91. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 77 degrees. More sunshine for Thursday, but then showers and thunderstorms moving in the afternoon. Some storms could be severe, a high of 94. Showers and thunderstorms for Thursday night as well, a low of 70 degrees. This is 89.7 NPR News, and All Sides continues.
We're talking about drought this hour with Jeff Masters, director of meteorology for Weather Underground, and also Jeff Rogers. He's a state of Ohio climatologist. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Like to know how you're handling the shortage of water this year, if it's changed your habits in any way. And if you have a question for our experts, you're welcome. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Jeff Masters and Jeff Rogers, you were mentioning earlier these long periods of dry, hot weather punctuated by shorter, intense periods of wet weather. And it reminded me of when I lived in Arizona and they had the monsoon season, which the 2 years I happened to live there, the first year was the 100-year flood and the second year was the 500-year flood. So it was pretty rainy. But is that where we're headed? Jeff Rogers, is that kind of the direction, or isn't it not about that?
That would be the direction, yes. So we would expect to have more days with over an inch of rain and some, very rarely, with a lot of inches of rain, and be an event like that taking place in Arizona. So fortunately, those will still be rare, but it's kind of odd. There's no guarantee. You know, this, a 100 and a 500-year event could occur in two consecutive years.
Well, that's what they were saying.
Yeah. And then last year, Arizona had a drought. It was part of the Southern Plains drought. It was very dry.
Jeff Masters, at some point, does it build upon itself, where if you don't have enough moisture, I mean, it gets worse and worse and worse? You talk about how the deserts are created. We hear stories about how the deserts are created. Can it get worse where actually our topography starts to change?
Sure. When you dry out the soil to such a point where it can't support vegetation, then the plants dry up, blow away, and you get desert conditions. It's called desertification. And that is expected to be more and more of a problem for areas down a little bit farther to the south, particularly over, say, Mexico, expanding northwards into the southwest U.S. It's going to be a lot harder to grow vegetation there, and we do expect an increase in desert conditions to expand over the next few decades.
Is there anything humans can do to affect that one way or the other?
They're in Africa building a giant wall of plants, trees, against the encroachment of the Sahara Desert. So you can try and build or plant some drought-resistant sorts of vegetation to try and stabilize the soil and hold the desert at bay. And those kinds of things do need to happen. And in general, we need to be managing our water resources better in places where we don't have a lot of water. For instance, in the Southwest, they're wasting huge amounts of water on agriculture, trying to grow things like hay, which is really dumb to grow because it's a very poor quality crop, doesn't make you much money and requires a lot of water. So yeah, we need to be smarter about how we use water. We need to start modifying our landscapes to plant some more drought-resistant vegetation.
Harley in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Harley.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I have a couple comments. I'm an organic gardener on the west side of Columbus. I've been doing this for 10 years. I was raised on a farm in Kentucky, down in Owenton, Kentucky, during my teenage years. And fortunately, I learned a lot about soil. My grandfather didn't use a lot of chemicals, but he did use a lot of crop rotation and water preservation. Owenton doesn't have, like, huge lakes and ponds. You know, they're very limited in regard to groundwater quality. But what caught me off guard, and I've been watching this develop for 3 years, was the depth of no groundwater in my garden. And you don't normally associate that with Ohio, but I didn't even catch on to this to about mid-June. And I could put my hand in my loamy soil up to the knuckles, fingers first down, and just come up with dust and no ground moisture at all. And I've been fighting that ever since. When it rains, we get a tenth of an inch, and it looks like it rained, but nothing of what we need until, like, yesterday we had a decent rain. So I agree with the previous speaker who was talking about water preservation. I have a 350-gallon interconnected water tank system to save rainwater so I don't have to use city water for watering. But we're going to have to get a lot smarter in how we use water, including gray water, like things from bathtubs and kitchen sinks and bathroom sinks, that kind of thing. And it's like, I want to know, I followed the trends, and the speaker that was previously is correct about the drought conditions, the climate change forecast in the southwest United States. It's going to get a lot more serious, I think, before it gets better. And I'd like to hear opinions on that. And I'll take my answers off the phone.
Okay, thanks, Harley.
Sure.
Jeff Rogers?
Well, those were interesting comments. I don't know if the viewer irrigates his ground or not, or waters, but it's been extremely dry since the middle of May, and conservation is probably what Ohio is on the border of right now if the drought conditions continue to get worse. The state of Ohio is closely monitoring the drought conditions, and currently it's in a phase two alert stage, and in which all agencies are keeping tabs on the water supplies around the state and agricultural conditions, and also taking input from people around the state as to just how bad it is locally so that they can assess what is needed in terms of assistance or aid. But the next stage, if the drought continues in Ohio, the next stage will be conservation, and we'll start to see mandatory conservation issued in certain areas around the state where the drought is worst. So despite the severity of the drought nationally, Ohio is on the fringe of it, and it's not quite so bad yet, but certainly comments from the viewer and a lot of other people would be welcome to state government and, you know, just information about what's going on out there.
Jeff Masters, do you want anything to that?
One thing to think about is Americans love their lawns. We got that idea from the English, who had a very different climate. It's a lot wetter and cooler in England, and they brought their idea of lawns over to North America, where the climate's not so cool and wet. And really, lawns are unsuitable for this climate a lot of years, like this year in particular. And I think Americans need to learn to come up with their own sort of lawn solution that's more suited for this climate and give up on those nice green expanses that we all love so much that are really something that's more fitting for England. We got to be smarter about how we use our green space in front of our homes and our businesses.
Well, not only that, but the sorts of chemicals and stuff we put on our lawn, the runoff's going to be more extreme because the runoff is more extreme when there are those times of rain on top of dry ground. Now it's just getting washed right into the rivers and streams instead of soaking up. I mean, that seems like that's going to be a bigger and bigger problem too.
That's right. When you do have drought conditions, when you get a heavy rainpour, it tends to run off more quickly because there's less vegetation to slow down the rainwater.
Jeff Rogers?
Extreme precipitation, such as we might expect in the future, and we've been experiencing to some degree in the last few summers in Ohio, is particularly dangerous because, as you say, during high rainfall eras, we get a lot of runoff and potentially a lot of pollution. But even low water levels are very dangerous. It reduces the amount of oxygen in rivers and streams, and it causes a lot of fish death, so it starts to hurt tourism and fishing. So both high and low amounts of water are going to have big impacts on water ecosystems.
We had a really nice rain the other day, and our caller, I think Harley, mentioned this. We had a nice rain yesterday, and it was for most of the morning, but it was only most of the morning. I remember the days when we could go days and days and days with rain. And then when it ended, the sun came out, and it was dry within an hour.
Right. So we have trouble holding on to that moisture a lot unless it gets a good, long, cloudy soaking period so that the water can get into the soil and stay there for a few days.
And Jeff Masters, it was very muggy here last night. It was only in the mid-70s by the evening, but it was only in the mid-70s by the evening. What are we talking about? But it was very muggy. How does that happen?
It says to me that you're not experiencing extreme drought yet, because the croplands around where you live hold in a lot of moisture and give out that moisture and keep the atmosphere humid. But what's going on in some of the central parts of the country where the drought's more intense is it's not been so muggy the last few weeks just because there's just no moisture available anymore. But you guys there in Ohio, it's not quite so bad there. The crops are still doing evapotranspiration, it's called, where they're sending out some moisture. And yeah, it's been staying very hot and humid in recent weeks here in the center part of the country.
My guests are Jeff Masters. He's director of meteorology for Weather Underground, and also Jeff Rogers, professor of geography and atmospheric science at OSU and a state of Ohio climatologist. Questions or comments for them? We're talking about drought. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeff Rogers, are there other things you look at, for instance, insect populations, other kinds of things external to the weather itself that tell you something about the weather?
No, the not like that, but we do depend on long-range weather forecasts to at least get some idea of what kind of assessment we can make about the future of the moisture conditions in the state. So we get long-range weather forecasts that might extend up for several months, and they have varying degrees of reliability. Usually the ones that are closer in time, maybe only a month out, are a little bit more reliable. But a lot of the other techniques for making forecasts, such as using insects or other natural phenomenon, largely are unproven. So we don't rely on those as much as we do as numerical models and long-range forecasts.
Jeff Masters, you talked earlier about what it's, things are going to look like or what the long-range projections are for 2050. You says it'll be twice as common for it to be this dry.
That's right. And if you look at the models that are predicting future climate and take an average of them, the actually average condition predicted over the center of the country by 2030 is similar to what we saw during the great Dust Bowl droughts of the 1930s. So not a very encouraging picture. And if you take that and project it even farther to the end of the century, we're talking about dry conditions unprecedented in the history of the country, particularly over the southern parts of the U.S. And it's going to be hard to grow crops in that situation. And we're going to be seeing some significant problems with people trying to live in areas like Las Vegas and Phoenix that don't have enough water.
Well, not only that, the energy it takes to bring it in and to heat and cool. 614-292-8513, if you want to give us a call. Jeff Rogers, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
No, not particularly, but I think that one of the points that was made earlier, too, was about the temperature conditions last night and the fact that we still have enough moisture in the air to keep the temperatures up at night. During the drought of 1988, we were in a unique situation where we were setting record high temperatures on a number of summer days during the drought, and temperatures reached over 100 several times. But at night, we also set some all-time record lows. So we had a few of those take place that summer, too. And that was because of the extraordinary dryness that occurred during those summer days in 88. The air would get so dry that it just couldn't hold the heat any longer, and it became very cold at night, too. So we had a few cold nights and then some very hot days.
Once again, Jeff Masters, that reminds me of a desert-type scenario.
Yeah, that's exactly what you expect in a desert. And when it's dry, you don't have the warm nighttime temperatures that you commonly get when you have all the moisture that we're used to seeing here in the Midwest.
So, Jeff Masters, what's going on around the world? Is this a worldwide network of climate change, or is this just what we're talking about happening in North America and other things are happening elsewhere?
Yeah, what you expect to see any point during time is that some parts of the globe will be above normal in temperature and some will be below. And this summer, it's our turn to be hot and dry. But over in England, I'm sure you'll see during the Olympics coming up this weekend, it's been very cool and rainy there. They've had their coolest and rainiest weather since the early 1990s this summer. And if you keep on going over towards Central Asia, they've had exceptionally hot weather. They've had record wildfires. We've seen some of that smoke drift all the way over to the west coast of the U.S. And portions of North Africa have seen exceptionally hot temperatures this summer. Morocco had its hottest day in their history last week. So, yeah, it's a pattern of alternating warm, cold, warm, cold. This is very typical. But what you're seeing because of global warming is that the warm areas of the globe are being record warm and record dry because now the globe is at a much warmer base temperature.
We have an email from Karen. She's wondering about small farms versus big farms. She says she gets a lot of her produce from the Clintonville Farmers Market every Saturday and wonders if those farmers, I guess smaller farmers, will have less product or charge more for what they have. Is there any sense about whether the weather change affects the big farmers more than the smaller farmers?
Well, the bigger farmers have at least the potential to irrigate their crops, and there is some degree of irrigation in Ohio, although it's not quite as extensive as it is in other parts of the Midwest. I don't know about the smaller farmers. It would all depend upon how much they can afford the water for their crops. It depends on how small you mean by small, I guess. But it's kind of an issue of finances whether they can afford the water for irrigation.
Earlier, Jeff Masters, when you were talking about the estimated economic damages, $50 billion. What are you talking about? Where is that $50 billion coming from when you talk about damages?
Yeah, that's mostly agricultural damages, but we're already starting to see some damages due to shipping losses in the Mississippi River system. The river is getting too low to support barge traffic, and that's causing delays. And that's a huge part of the American economy. Transporting goods via barge is critical. So most agricultural, a little bit with barge transportation, also some problems with energy. There are some, for instance, nuclear power plants that are having trouble cooling their reactors because the water is getting too hot and the water levels are getting so low as well. So combination of factors, mostly due to crop damage, and we should see those costs go up, I'm thinking, because the drought doesn't show any signs of slowing down over the next few weeks.
Well, that's an interesting comment, the comment about the barge traffic. We had that problem back in 1988, and it was quite serious. The Mississippi barge traffic almost came to a stop because the river levels got so low. And this is important, I think, because while not every drought is exactly alike, we're about 4 to 6 weeks behind, I'd say, the timeline of the 1988 drought. And so as the next 4 to 6 weeks evolve, if the drought continues, it's interesting that aspects like that, you know, traffic on the Mississippi and just general deterioration of crops in Ohio, you know, might become much bigger issues and start to match the levels of destruction we saw back in that last drought.
Right, because all summer long I have to keep reminding myself it's only June, or it's only May, it's only June, it's only July.
Right. That's right. Yeah, and the drought of 1988 definitively ended in middle of July with very heavy rains all over the state. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of rain now, but it's not going to be enough to stop the drought. And it'll be interesting to see how things evolve over the next few weeks.
We are going to return to our guests, Jeff Masters, Director of Meteorology for Weather Underground, also Jeff Rogers. He is a State of Ohio climatologist, and your calls and emails when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Bishop Leonard Blair. He helped conduct the doctrinal assessment of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, an organization representing 80% of U.S. nuns. Now he's assigned to help make sure the group conforms to the church's teachings on human sexuality, the right to life, the ordination of women, and other issues. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Looking for an easy way to support our station? How about joining our Sustaining Giving program? As a sustainer, your membership never expires. No more reminders in the mail, and your member card renews annually. The ongoing support of sustaining members saves our station time and money and helps us focus more of your support on news programming. Make every dollar count. Become a sustainer today. Visit WOSU.org/sustainer to sign up. 78 degrees with sunshine in downtown Columbus, a high of 91 today, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 77. More sunshine expected on Thursday, showers and thunderstorms likely in the afternoon. Some of those storms could be severe, a high of 94. More rain Thursday night, a low of 70 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
My My guests are Jeff Masters, Director of Meteorology for Weather Underground, talking to us from Michigan right now, and also Jeff Rogers, Professor of Geography and Atmospheric Science at OSU. He's also a State of Ohio climatologist. If you have a question or comment about drought, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you. I have a comment, not so much a question, but just something of my own observation. This year has been really interesting for us. I am a florist. We do just weddings at our shop, and this drought has really affected the types of flowers that we can get into our shop to work with for weddings, and also like the quality of the flowers that we've been able to get this year. We try to buy locally grown flowers whenever we can, and it's been so hard for farmers who grow flowers to get the farm to produce enough flowers for the supply, and also the flowers that we have been able to get, because it's so hot, the colors are not as vibrant as they normally are. So like the oranges have been a little bit faded, or the pinks are a little bit lighter, and it's hard because people are like, oh, well, you know, you should just be able to get whatever I want whenever I want it, and I'm paying for this, and, you know, I should be able to have wedding flowers that are as beautiful as the photos in these magazines. And we can still get beautiful flowers, but I don't think that people realize exactly how far-reaching the effects of drought are. It's not just on food and crops. Like, it affects so many other things, including, you know, flowers and other types of things. And it's been interesting because flowers have been blooming at different times this year than they normally
yes,
have.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it's been hard because things that are in season at a normal time, we can't get those this year, or they've been out of season at different times. It's been an unusual year for flowers, and it's really affected like the floral community and the florists in the area.
When you can't get locally grown, where do you go?
We have to go to other countries, South America or Canada, other places like that. So costs of flowers are really going up, too, because then you have to pay for shipping, and you have to factor in if something is out of season locally because it bloomed at the wrong time, then we have to factor in that we might have to get that from another place. So it's been an unusual year for florists, for sure. It's really affected us a lot more than people would think.
Kind of a luxury, but, yeah, I think it's thanks, Melissa, for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good comment. It's kind of another impact that takes place during drought. But during droughts, you know, we also get increased insect activity and diseases in plants. So I imagine that the growers of the plants are having increased problems just with those kind of things, as well as water shortages. And it, a lot of times, boils down to the issue of whether they can afford to do a lot of irrigation to keep the plants going.
You say increased disease with plants because of the shortage of water?
Right. Diseases and insect activity on the plants. So I would imagine that some insects probably take a toll on the appearance of the leaves.
I might add that this year has been really crazy as far as the growing season goes, because in March we had that summer in March episode where we had 10 days of incredibly warm weather in the 80s in March, made all the plants come out of hibernation and start blooming. And in Michigan, we lost pretty much the entire tart cherry crop, 90% of the apple crop. I know in Ohio, you had pretty huge losses as well. And so that just kickstarted the whole growing season way earlier than usual. And then we had a bunch of frosts and freezes. So definitely the plants are experiencing an unprecedented year as far as weather goes.
Donald in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Donald. Hi,
hello.
Donald.
Howdy. Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering about the idea that the thermometers have been moved in a lot of instances from the middle of downtown, in, especially like in Cincinnati, to way out in the country in the airport. And I understand that the city grows up and it's more warm houses and stuff around the thermometer when it's in the city, and so the temperature increases some there. But instead, they've radically moved the thermometers out to the airports and stuff. This happened maybe in the late 30s or early 40s, at least in Cincinnati. And yet they still maintain the temperature records for the weather report from the old records, where for a long time the thermometer was very close to the city most of the time. In our case, it was in Clifton. It's about two or three miles from downtown Cincinnati, the center of downtown Cincinnati, and I wondered why they don't allow the temperatures as they would have been taken from the old locations to be permitted now, because that would obviously show how vastly overheated the cities are from even before when the thermometers were in the city, and now they want to have the thermometers out in the country, so it's not, there's no heat global warming threat. And of course they did that a long time ago, but it works out really well in this case.
Jeff Rogers? That's a good point. I mean, we do have trouble maintaining a good temperature record, although it's generally been achievable. Back in the 30s and 40s, when they moved the thermometers out to the airports, those were cooler locations. And now, over the decades, those cooler locations have warmed up. They're not, for example, in the case of Columbus and maybe Cincinnati, they're not warming up because the city's encroaching on them, because the at least here in Columbus, the airport location is still quite remote. But it's partly due to the climate changes that are taking place. And I would add too that we do have a lot of temperature stations around the country that are kept in rural areas and maintained very carefully. And these too are also showing the warming taking place. So you're right, the cities are extremely warm compared to what they used to be. And then there's also the impact of climate change taking place.
I might add that, yes, the long-term temperature records in cities going back to the late 1800s are a little difficult to, you know, say, hey, we just broke a record that was 100 years old, because they have moved the station. But when we compute the global and then the national and state average temperatures, we do correct for cases where they have moved the sensors using techniques like Jeff was just saying, where we use more rural stations. So the global average temperatures and kind of the larger statewide average temperatures you hear reported, those are corrected for these errors in moving stations. It's just when we're talking about individual records at a particular city where you got to kind of say, well, you know, they moved the station, so maybe this isn't really so representative after all.
Thanks, Donald. Jeff Rogers. Terry in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Yes. And could you ask your guest that with this fracking going on in the state of Ohio, and they have to use so much gallons of water, I think over 40,000 gallons of water for one drilling site, doesn't that increase the drought situation too?
Currently, it's not probably having much effect. We just came off a string of very wet years, including last year, which was an all-time record high precipitation level all across the state. So currently, underneath the ground, quite some distance in what we call the groundwater, the state is flush with water, and we're doing pretty well there. And I think that you're right to be concerned. I mean, Ohioans should all be worried about what's going to happen to the quality of that groundwater, and possibly to the levels of groundwater in the future. But at the present time, water levels aren't really too big an issue. They've got plenty of water there to use for whatever procedures they're using when they do fracking.
How long does it take before groundwater is appreciably impacted by something like a drought? Jeff Masters?
It depends on the locale. I mean, usually you need at least two straight years of drought before the groundwater starts to suffer and you see a situation where you got to start doing water restrictions. So we're only year one here. I don't think we'll have severe water problems with the groundwater until next year.
Yeah, Ohio is seeing very little effect. Hoover Reservoir, for example, here in central Ohio is down about 2 feet, whereas in 1988 it was down 20 feet. So we're not hearing too many reports of water restrictions around the state yet. So generally, the water supplies are pretty good. It's mostly a concern about the current agricultural crop. That's the big issue.
Jeff Masters, just because you're in Michigan, I've been hearing lots of reports that the Great Lakes are way low. Lake Michigan's low. Lake Huron's low, especially up by the Upper Peninsula. Is that drought related?
Mostly that's related to the fact we had such a warm winter with little ice cover on the lakes. When you don't have much ice during the winter, it allows a lot more water to evaporate from the lakes and thus reduces the lake level. Sure, the drought is also contributing some to that, but the main impact was the warm winter.
Email from Scott. He writes, another impact of drought that is not often thought of is the impact on landscaping companies. I work part-time for a landscaper in the summer. He calls me when he needs extra help, but no rain means the grass doesn't grow, and then it doesn't need to be mowed. No extra money for me. Very true. The grass has not been growing.
That's right. So, the grass may pick up a little bit. We've got down here, we've got some opportunities for rain later this week. We just had some yesterday. I think people might need their grass cut pretty soon, at least in central Ohio for the very short term. But, we've had a long spell where it hasn't been necessary to cut grass. So it's a big impact on those companies also.
David and Bexley are on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, how you doing? Interesting topic. I was interested in how state and local policy, federal policy, changes to accommodate varieties in weather issues, and especially considering the fact that the West is so water deficient and the East is so water plentiful. If you live in the West, you understand that development is strictly restricted based on water use, and but I don't see us coming to a strategy that helps everyone equally. I think there needs to be a strategy that reduces auto use wherever possible and minimizes CO2 buildup as a major global warming gas. But I think in the long term, this needs to be done. I think water shortage will become the problem, not gasoline shortage.
That's very possibly true. Here in the Midwest, if these sort of droughts become increasingly frequent, as we think they might, major changes in water policy will almost certainly have to take place. The Great Lakes levels are expected to decline slightly, and this will have all kinds of impacts around the Great Lakes. Generally, there's long been some speculation about using Great Lakes water supplies to help out the western United States. I don't know if that's what you meant by, distributing the water more fairly across the country. But, this kind of stuff is extremely opposed by a lot of people too in the Midwest. It's viewed as our water supply, and we need to just take care of it and keep it here.
Yeah, water is life, and there's going to be huge political battles in the coming decades over water, much more so than we've seen so far.
Okay, David, we've talked about that before. It's a global problem, and I thank you for your call.
Thanks.
We have just a few minutes left, 614-292-8513. If you want to get the call in quickly, we'll get your calls. We're talking about drought with Jeff Masters of Weather Underground and also Jeff Rogers. He's a state of Ohio climatologist. There's some forecasts that predict that these conditions, and you both have been talking about this, will persist until October. What do we mean by that? Does it mean it's going to be this hot and this dry, all things being equal, through October?
Well, the long-range forecast is suggesting that, and a few weeks ago, we were seeing the same thing in the long-range forecasts, and there appeared to be little hope, but we are getting some rain now, so the weather pattern has changed slightly, at least in Ohio. I don't want to mislead about that. I mean, Ohio's getting some rain, and so these forecasts have a large margin of error, and they can be wrong, but they're indicating dryness, and the drought monitor folks expect that Ohio's drought will worsen. But at least right now we're on hold for the last week or so, and going into the next week too, I think we're at least getting enough moisture to stay even and keep conditions from getting worse.
Yeah, it looks like the shift in the jet stream is going to be a little bit to the west, causing the high pressure to move over that direction, making the driest conditions a little bit west of Ohio. So things should ease up over the next few weeks anyway. And looking out into August, I mean, we don't have a very accurate picture of what will happen, but the odds are these sorts of droughts reinforce themselves. When you've got dry soil, it means that it gets hotter and tends to create high pressure zones that make low pressure systems less likely to intrude. So you kind of create your own weather with a drought and make high pressure more likely and rainstorms and low pressure less likely. So yeah, very likely we'll continue to be hotter and drier than average through at least September, and if not into October, as far as our best models can see.
I heard on BBC this morning, I think it's Greenland, they're seeing melting of ice shelves in Greenland that never have melted before, particularly this early or at all. Jeff Rogers, does that matter to us here?
It's a further sign of the climate changing.
They very unexpected, though.
Right. I just saw that this morning, too, in the dispatch. And it's a sign that that the climate's radically shifting. Generally on Greenland, it doesn't get above freezing during the summer. It gets close, but not above. And apparently it's been above normal or above freezing for quite some time, and they had a lot of melting. But it is interesting that sometimes the expanse of high pressure has a secondary lobe over Greenland and parts of the Arctic. And apparently for a while there, they had a long spell of very sunny, warm weather, and just like we were having here. And then it's exactly the opposite in England. So it varies from one place to the next.
But Jeff Masters, once that ice has melted, does it come, I mean, do you get it back?
Yeah, I wrote about this today in my blog. I have a daily blog I write at weatherunderground.com. And, I mean, in the winter, the ice will refreeze on the ocean surface. But on the ice cap of Greenland, no, this is pretty permanent. We're seeing steady increases each year with the amount of ice melting off of Greenland. And Greenland is now contributing about, 30% of the total amount of sea level rise that we're globally seeing due to melting ice caps. So that's the main concern, is that when you get melting over 97% of the surface of Greenland, like happened in mid-July this year, that you're going to boost the amount of water going in the oceans and causing sea level rise. And that'll cause more damage to coastlines, particularly when you get intense storms bringing high storm surges.
Well, Jeff Masters, once again, blogs weatherunderground.com. We'll, of course, post that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Jeff Masters, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Ann.
Jeff Masters, he's Director of Meteorology for Weather Underground. Also, Jeff Rogers. Jeff, thanks for joining us in the studio today.
You're certainly welcome.
Jeff Rogers, he is a State of Ohio climatologist and also a professor of geography and atmospheric science at OSU. Credits to my staff. All Sides includes Associate Producer A.B. Jurevich, All Sides Intern Corinne Gleckler, All Sides Production Assistants Rachel Ramey and Leticia Wiggins, All Sides Volunteer Andrew Sweet. Video production by Rich and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.